Welcome to Long Story Long. I'm your host, Lisa Curry. Today's guest is the very talented writer and podcaster, Margo Donahue. I am so excited to have you on today. How are you, Margo?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yes, of course. Thanks for being here. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I'm originally from Long Island, and that's how you pronounce it accurately.
My roommate is, so I'm very aware.
Glen Cove, and then my dad worked for IBM, which is similar to being an army brat. You moved every few years. So I lived in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and then my family settled in Northern California. I went to San Jose State. And then when I graduated, I moved to Brooklyn, which was in the 90s. And then I've been in this apartment since the 90s. So I have a rent stabilized apartment, so I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, Margo, I need you on camera to say that you will me your place. Sorry, we cannot proceed.
Okay. You are all witnesses. Lisa Curry gets this apartment.
My God, you know that gives people heart attacks.
Yeah, people come in and they're like, how many rooms do you have? And you're close to the subway and it's the second floor and you're near the park. Yeah. I'm like, that's right.
I mean, at that point, it's why would you, there's no reason to buy property.
No. And it's especially like New Yorkers, people like who live in big cities really do understand like the value of that. Like friends that are from other parts of the country. I have a really great friend from Colorado. She came over once and she's like, I think it's so interesting how New Yorkers use their space. And I'm like, I have a palace compared to.
Oh, yeah.
I have so many friends who still have studios or one bedrooms, you know, and they're storing things in their ovens, you know, most of the time.
Very familiar. I lived in New York for a short while in Manhattan, and I split a one bedroom with a friend, and it was a tenement building, you know, with the shower in the kitchen, toilet down the hall. And looking back, I'm like, how did we do that?
Because you're adults? Young. You're young and you're going out. And so you get home and you're drunk or you're, you know, whatever. And so you just crash. So that's
I think also New York grinds your bones to dust. And so you're just working so much that it's like, okay, I'm home to sleep.
Right. Exactly.
Wait, how long did you live in Northern California then? Just for college, pretty much?
Just for college, yeah.
And what did you study?
Communications, speech communications. A very...
Love it.
Yeah. Basic degree.
You're communicating wonderfully.
Thank you. I do use my degree. Like all my friends make fun of me. Kind of like, what is that? I have French literature or I have this or that. And they don't do them at all, use them at all. Yeah.
No one does. Unless you're like a doctor. I mean, I guess everybody uses parts of whatever. What made you move back to New York after that?
It was very funny in the mid 90s that like before it was a weird time where I didn't have I had retail experience. I didn't have office experience. I wasn't one of those lucky people that had all those internships and stuff. So I had a hard time finding a job. And so I had to just get experience. And I just thought, I'll move to New York. It's easier to get a job there than it was in San Francisco at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll just do it for a couple of years and then I'll move back because nobody leaves the Bay Area. And I get here and I get this rent stabilized apartment, like I said. And my dad was like, get your name on that lease, whatever you do. Yeah. And then I just stayed. I was like, why would I go back? I couldn't afford it now anyway. Nobody can. But I kind of super fell in love with Brooklyn. It just came a part of me.
I love it. I do love it out there. And it's interesting. Somebody described New York versus LA to me years ago. They said New York is a river and LA is a lake, and I was like, oh, that makes sense, because I feel like things just kind of move along and happen in New York, and it feels impossible to find a job in Los Angeles sometimes, but when I lived in New York, people were just like throwing, like a friend would literally say, hey, do you want to work my brunch shift at a restaurant I had never stepped foot in before? And I'm like,
yeah,
sure. People just like make things work.
It's in so a much way that easier.
No other city does. Yeah.
Yeah, I like LA a lot, but it's the suburbs. I mean, and it also, it takes an hour to get anywhere to do anything. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Those are the German shepherds downstairs.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it. I have a German shepherd who insists on being in the room when I'm recording anything. So I'm like, okay, she's just napping.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I think it's just easier to get around New York. I think it's, and that also adds to it. But yeah, New Yorkers are always like picking up gigs and offering people side gigs. So yeah.
Yeah. Did you know, I mean, I guess when you moved back to New York, did you know you wanted to get into writing? Was that something that was always on
your... That's something I've wanted since I was like 10 years old.
Oh, I love it.
I saw the Aristocats and I wanted a big white fluffy cat. I grew up with brothers and sisters. I wanted my own apartment with my own bathroom, my own fridge, you know, because that also I had roommates when I got out of college and I wanted to be a writer. It took forever to make them all happen at once.
Sure, of course, yeah.
But yeah, I finally got there, but it took a while, but yes.
That's awesome. And what kind of were you always writing then as a kid?
I was always reading and I was always scribbling things down and I would make up magazines and I would make up books and I would make up stories and things like that.
Please tell me you still have them.
No. I know. No. We moved a lot, you know, and when things would get into boxes and then we would go into bigger homes and the boxes would get moved to different spaces. And unfortunately, no. And then when I graduated college, I got very like, oh, I need to find just regular work. I'm not, you know, I would come up with ideas for books, but I just worked in magazines and I worked in the PR side and the marketing side. Yeah. I did that for about 10 years and then I'm like, I really want to write. I really want to do something more creative. Mm-hmm. And so I kept doing that, you know, as a side gig, but then I really started diving into podcasting and script writing. And I still kept pitching books and pitching books and pitching ideas. And then I finally landed with a company that said, I pitched writing a book about Park Slope, which is where I live. Mm-hmm. And the company that I pitched it to said, you know what? We're doing all these books about location filming in different cities. Would you like to do one about Brooklyn? And I'm like, holy crap. Yes. Yes. Yeah. That sounds amazing. And then a couple of months later, COVID happened. And I was like...
And you're like, well, now I have to write a book because there's not fuck else to do.
Nothing. I got fuck all to do. I guess I'll watch movies. And at first I was going to just like... write a bunch of essays about films, but I just watched so many movies and then would go out on the weekends and just look up these locations. And then I just kind of got obsessive about it, I guess.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So I watched over 250 movies. It took about 2 years. Took so many photos and just a lot of research and it's been amazing.
So 250 movies specifically. So real quick, will you just give a quick breakdown of the book for the listeners?
Yeah, sure.
It's so cool, but just so they follow along.
I'm sorry.
No, you're totally fine. You're totally fine.
It's called Filmed in Brooklyn. It's with History Press. So basically, these are all movies that are located in Brooklyn. Either they take place solely in Brooklyn or they're just some location where they are in Brooklyn. And it starts in the silent era and it goes all the way up to like the Marvel universe. So it's from Spike Lee, it's Saturday Night Fever, it's Moonstruck, and everything in between, from the Brooklyn Bridge to Coney Island and everything else.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and I've learned so much about Brooklyn, which I thought I knew so much about. And then it turns out there's 40 neighborhoods. Like, I thought there were 10.
Right? I'm like, hold on, 40? Where?
40?
I know the standards.
Some of them are just like 3 blocks of something. And I, you know, because I don't have a car either. You know, I have to get around by subway or bus. So
yeah.
I learned so much about it. And there's just, I've become like a Spike Lee completist. Like, I've just checked off those boxes and
I love it.
Yeah.
So the 250 movies, were those all filmed in Brooklyn?
All of them. Did I get through all of them? No. Do I know how Baby Mama ends? Absolutely no clue.
You know what? Fair.
It's not a great movie. Kazam? No idea. That's like
You know, I admire you for shutting off movies you're not enjoying because I was watching a movie yesterday. I actively hated it. I was like, this is so dumb. And I just started working in front of the TV because I'm like, well, I have to finish it. I can't not finish it. And it's so stupid.
Sometimes I have to know.
Yeah.
But at some point, it just makes you... It's one of those cases because I love Tina Fey. Everybody loves Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Steve Martin's in this movie.
Yeah.
You're like, a part of my brain goes, well, you could just put them in a room together with nothing and they'll make magic. And that's like, turns out, not true.
That's really funny.
You could phone them in the bookstore that I know and it'll be amazing. No, it won't.
So what was your process putting this together? Because I feel like, I mean, so much research.
Yeah.
So much research. And you, did you know from the beginning that that your end goal was a book, or was this what, I guess you had that offer. Had you already started digging into these things by then? Or
I was really looking to do, I mean, I've been writing about pop culture for years and podcasting about pop culture. So everything from like The Real Housewives and true crime, because that's, I care about the really important things in life.
Yeah.
But, and I've always just loved movies and books and things like that and writing about that. But I've also, I'm kind of obsessive about my neighborhood and the history of it and that kind of thing. I didn't know how I was going to put the book together. And it took me finding out that the first movie studio was in Brooklyn, and it was in Midwood, Brooklyn in 1897. And I went that back that far. And then that helped me kind of find my way. But yeah, I don't know. I was like, how do people do this? How do they structure these things? How do they figure it out? It was hard. Yeah. It's hard to get images. You know, I took as many photos as I could. I tried to get as many as I could. Some movie studios were better than others about getting images. You know, Netflix was super generous. Paramount wasn't. I had to, you know, you kind of learn things. Oh,
interesting.
You know, they all want to make money. They all want, I think like 20, 30 years ago, I could have just written to places and they would just give it to you.
Oh, whereas sure. Nowadays, like, they just want to monetize this.
How do we monetize? Especially, I thought during COVID, it's going to be easy. No.
Yeah, you're like, I'll make a TikTok about it, okay?
Yeah. Fucking A. Just, you know. But it worked out. I mean, and I got to know a lot of great artists and amazing history. So it's been fun. I mean, it was fun
crazy.
To go.
Yeah. The thing about it, the first movie studio being there is so interesting. It's like, of course it was, because the East Coast was built up first, but I think we think of Los Angeles as the place where movies are made. So if I had to guess, I would have guessed the first movie studio was in Los Angeles, because which doesn't make sense, because it's like, well, there was entertainment before Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, there was. And it was in, and it was started all, and I had to be like, oh, yeah, they had them all over the world, too. Because I'm a New Yorker. I'm like, oh, everything's from here. Like,
everything. No. New York is the genesis of all life.
Exactly. Now, I found interesting personally was that so Thomas Edison was one of the first people to start motion pictures, because that's the way he was. And he couldn't wait to figure out a way to monetize it. So he just sold it to a couple of dudes who were performers. And businessmen, and they knew how to create a movie studio. But when they first hired actors, well, actors were people on stage, and actors on stage were like, what am I doing in front of a camera? And there's no audience there. I can't perform in front of a camera. I don't get a reaction. That's not real. Real is a crowd. And so they couldn't get, and also they didn't have, you know, it was silent. They didn't have your voice, and they can only record like 10 minutes at a time. So real actors, theater actors, thought it was a joke. So they had to get what people do. You get immigrants. You get people who don't know what they're doing, but they just get people off the street to do it. And then, so they had all these people, and they go out to Midwood, which was like the country back then, middle of nowhere. And then all these people with different languages, hardly anybody spoke English, so they would just pantomime to one another.
Oh, wow.
And that's how they got that acting style of just being like, hey, you don't go there.
Yeah,
it's cold, like, you know. And big and broad, but it made sense. Like, that's how they, and that's like the audience could understand that when they were filming. And that's, and to me, that like blew my mind. Like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. Like, and then once I learned that, once I got on that kind of thing, I was like a total geek all the way.
Well, that stuff is so fascinating, and there's so many things that habits or traditions or whatever that have carried on mm-hmm. to present day from, you know, 100, 200 years ago that we just don't even clock. And these things morph over time. And it's just, you know, like you were saying, that style of acting, who would have known that that was because of a language barrier? You know, but it's like, oh, of course that makes sense.
Yeah. And again, you know, because you perform in front of an audience. And then I'm sure, like, if you tried to do Zoom comedy shows, that was totally different.
Oh, totally different. And I've performed overseas a bunch. So it's like, I'm like, oh, I'm definitely doing way more physicalities. Like, yeah, when I'm mm-hmm. performing overseas. And then everyone's like, okay, relax, we all speak English.
Right.
They're like, this is London.
but they say, like, we're divided by the same language.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So when you, I guess, what was your, like, process for keeping things organized? Because I imagine, I'm so fascinated with this part of somebody putting anything historical together, because I imagine it looks like one of those psychotic boards with, like, the red string all over and the pins.
I had folders on top of folders in my desk. I was like the mad professor. Uh-huh. It was so crazy. And so I decided I had Coney Island and the Brooklyn Bridge being mm-hmm. two categories. And then I had brownstone Brooklyn as a category. Mm-hmm. And then I had gritty Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So, like, your Saturday Night Fever, Dog Day Afternoon.
Ooh, yeah.
And then I had romantic Brooklyn. So, like, your Moonstrucks and things like that. And mm-hmm. that's how I kind of, and indie and auteur. So, like, indie directors, Spike Lee's and people like that. Mm-hmm. And that's how I kind of divided it up. And then I had a chapter where it's just by neighborhood. And then I could just listicles, but just, like, I described each neighborhood and then the movies that were filmed there. And it got exhaustive, but it was kind of fun because I just like, I am setting the record. And a couple of reporters like, this is great, I'm going to keep it by my desk because this is going to be one reporter said to me, because at the very end I said, these are people from Brooklyn, you know, either they've born there or have lived there at some time or created mm-hmm. there. And he says, that's the best part for me. And I'm like, that's a Wikipedia page, but okay. You know, I'm glad it. I'm glad you find it helpful.
That's funny. How far into, did you come all the way up to present day with including things?
Yes. Yes. But of course, I forgot the lead of the show, The Bear, the restaurant show.
Oh, God, yes. Uh-huh.
Who's so hot and so cute.
I'm forgetting his name. I know. He is a dream.
He's a dreamboat. I was having dreams about him, like, all spring. I thought he was from Chicago because he's so good at a Chicago accent. And I just handed it in and I found it. He's just, like, from the neighborhood next door to me.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm like this. So, second edition. I'll try to make sure he gets in there.
So when you're going through... this is a side note. I do love that. I feel like on the East Coast, things get old and people restore them or refurbish them. Where in Los Angeles, a building is 5 years old and they're like, burn it down. It's old. they're like, we can't have anything old in this city. They're just pushing elderly people into the sewer. what are some of the coolest, like, older buildings that existed or landmarks that existed in certain movies that you were able to find that still exist now?
Well, the Brooklyn Bridge, obviously, it's like one of the oldest.
And thankfully it's still there.
Thankfully it's still there. That's a place my great grandparents, that's where they dated. That was like, and that was their date
spot. Just like
spot.
A stroll down the Brooklyn Bridge?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Like the cute little Irish couple, like they couldn't afford very much. So that's like they would. And that's where they would date, and that. But that's, and there's certain neighborhoods around there that are still like that old and that, you know, connected to the past. There's some movie theaters that have been refurbished over time that are still there. The mm-hmm. Saturday Night Fever house is still the Saturday Night Fever house, but the place, the disco where they danced, mm-hmm. is now. It's so funny. It's a total Chinese area now.
Oh,
and so all the signs are in Chinese language. I'm not sure which one, but
like Mandarin or Cantonese or whatever.
One of those. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm like, but I have no idea.
I don't either. And then there's parts of Coney Island that are totally Russian now, but there's certain sections, like Coney Island has very sections that have never changed. And then and some of it because of hurricane, only because of Hurricane Sandy did they have to rebuild it. But that was pretty much the way it was. Some of the brownstones here in my neighborhood are like 125 years old. My building's over 100 years old.
Wow.
I mean, and I lived in California like you did. Like something was built in the 1970s. They're like, ooh, this is fancy. What are we doing?
Do you have any favorite discoveries when you were going through all this and learning all these things?
There's a movie I love, and I found it on Criterion. I don't know if you get the Criterion channel, mm-mm. but they do a lot of indie films and weird films. And last summer, they had a film, and it was like their number one film that summer, and it's called The Hot Rock.
Oh.
And it's 1972, and it's Robert Redford at his Robert Redfordiest. I mean, just dreamy.
I can't. He could still get it.
Oh, yeah, he could. Oh, and George Segal. And I don't know if you, like, not Veronica's Closet. He was in the other, like, NBC show, and he was... Just Shoot Me.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was hot when he was young. He could get it. He was super hot. It's a heist movie, and it takes place at the Brooklyn Museum, and it's fantastic, and it's got this great score with Quincy Jones, and it's super fun. But you can't get it. You have to, like, I actually bought a DVD player and bought this DVD just so I could have this movie, because I loved it so much. It's like that's been really special to me. And then
that's awesome.
And then I found out that people always ask me, what's your favorite movie? And I have a bunch, and I love them all. But I've discovered, I think Moonstruck is my most favorite movie of all time. It's
a good one. It's pretty solid.
It is a solid film. It is, first of all, funny as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Solid laughs throughout the whole thing. And it's a solid script too. Like, there's no improv going on. Like, this is a tight script. Cher is beautiful. Nicolas Cage is funny and weird. Like, the whole thing is weird, and then the house is beautiful. It's just,
I love that era for movies too. It feels like it feels like a peak
of rom-coms.
Just like, yeah, and scripts are so good, and they're fun, and they're different, and now everything is a derivative of something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but that's a separate conversation of me just complaining.
But it was like for smart adults. Like, they kind of, they assumed you had an active brain.
Yeah, which was nice. Which was nice. I missed that.
and they were couples that you rooted for, even though they weren't perfect people. You know, mm-hmm. like When Harry Met Sally. You know, they're people that are flawed, but you get the attraction, and you know, and we get Baby Fish Mouth. Like, what's better than that? Right?
Yeah. Did there happen to be anything that was filmed in your building? I feel like that's what I would be digging for the most, is like finding something.
No, not in my building, but around the corner from me, there's Donnie Brasco. Do you remember that movie with Al Pacino and
Johnny Depp? No.
They filmed that when I was here, and it used to be this skeezy donut shop. Like, it was so gross. And I remember I was describing it to my mother, and she goes, oh, that's like that candy store when you were a kid and you never were allowed to go in there. And I was like, oh, that's right. There was this candy store in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to go in there, and we'd say, you know, you don't have any candy. Do you have any wacky packs? And they'd be like, we got your wacky pack right here. Get out. You know, they just scare us out. She goes, yeah, they were the mob. Like, that's why you weren't allowed in there.
God.
I was like, oh my God. Like, I finally figured it out. Anyway,
you're like, oh, you didn't want me to have protection from with this.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, that's why you guys weren't allowed in there. They were like playing cards and stupid shit. Uh-huh. But anyway, Donnie Brasco was there. They filmed a lot of The Americans on my block, that show, with Kerry Russell, who's beautiful.
Oh,
and
stunning.
Skinny and really thin. And a lot of Law & Order is filmed here. And then on 3rd Street is a lot of Law & Order, but they also had Anchorman, and that was a big deal. Anchorman 2.
And
they filmed that. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So when they had... So the first movie studio, that would have been... I'm this is how bad I am with years and things. This is the late 1800s. That mm-hmm. What movies were coming out of that?
They actually, so they were like 10-minute films, 20-minute films. Mm-hmm. They're the first adaptations. So they're like A Christmas Carol, Shakespeare.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So that's how they, yeah. they went to the, they were immediately running out of ideas even then. Uh-huh. Like, what do we do? So like get some books and make movies out of them. And that's immediately what they did. They also made newsreels. And so they would go overseas and film things and then play them in front of movies. And these two men that ran the studio were very political, and they basically helped start the Spanish Civil War by kind of setting up their cameras and filming it in a particular way and stoking the passion for it.
What?
And, yeah. So they're one of the first propagandists of war.
That is insane, and also really speaks to the power of media, because I think people, yes. I mean, any one of us is susceptible to
absolutely
letting our minds run away with some information.
Propaganda, confirmation bias. We're all susceptible. And this is, you know, this is years before Birth of a Nation or anything like that. It was just people. Yeah, they got upset, and it was completely. Yeah, they would run these news clips, and that's helped get it started. It's
wild.
It's wild. It's so wild. And then it's so funny that these two men, and they, you know, like a lot of things in life, like they, by the time the 1920s happen, Hollywood is big as anything. They get bought mm-hmm. out. One of them dies young. One of them sort of, you know, fades away. Mm-hmm. They were both like born in England, came to America. Both of them were horrible anti-Semites, like really.
Oh.
So their Lovely. Stuff gets sold. Their building mm-hmm. is sold to a Jewish institution. It becomes a Jewish place for girls' education. And they're both those sexist and they're anti-Semitic. So I always think it's really
Incredible.
Cool.
That is poetry.
It educated Jewish women for decades. So I think that's amazing.
Yeah, that's actually, that's kinda best cool. case scenario for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's an apartment building. It's a condo. I mean, like anything in life, everything becomes a condo eventually.
Of course. I mean, that's one day we're going to have just all condos and nothing else.
That's what's happening. I mean, Flatbush Avenue, when I first moved here, it's like it's on its way to the Brooklyn Bridge and the Manhattan Bridge. And it was just Flatbush Avenue. And now they have the Brooklyn Nets and they have like a big stadium downtown. Mm-hmm. And now they're building condos all over the place down there. And it's like, oh, it's my like, God.
Fantastic. There'll be nothing to do but somewhere to live, I guess.
Somewhere to live. Yeah.
If you can
no
afford
place
it.
To park. No place. Yeah, exactly. But aren't they doing that in L.A. too?
They're doing that in L.A. too. And it's not even multi-purpose buildings for the most part. It's just condos, just luxury condos. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole I could murder someone over it. When you're pulling together all like the archival footage and photos and things, like, I mean, I in my imagination, before you were telling me about going to the studios and stuff, I'm like, oh, that's just probably just all at a library and you just pull out the records. And then it's like, no, of course not. Of course not. Everything is there.
There's a bunch there. It's just, first, it's COVID. So I had, you know, something that I thought would be easy turned out to be actually kind of difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, a lot of things are online. And the Brooklyn Library was very helpful. And I did get a lot of different images there. But it just, you know, Wikipedia is really helpful. Wikimedia is really helpful. There's a lot of people. There's also people who put stuff out to put it out in the open. Like, there's people who, like, take photos and say, like, basically, as long as you credit me, I'm cool. They just want to get their work out. So that's been really helpful. And I also, my brother was going to be my photographer for this, but unfortunately he passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
During the process. Thank you. So I picked up my high school hobby of photography.
And when I
was doing that, that's back when you had to be in the dark, you know, that circular that door you had to go through. And I used to have, like, that was me. I was a nerdy little photographer. When I was a kid, I was like, well, I guess I'm getting a camera out. And I took a ton of photos, and it turns out I miss photography. Like, that's something that's a part of me. And that's something that I put in the book, and there's a lot of my images in there. So it's really a work of me that I'm really proud of.
I love that. I mean, that's such a humongous undertaking to pull that all together. And then also to make it an interesting story and enjoyable to read. It's right. Just, there's so many things you have to hit.
Right.
You know?
And it has to look good. And then that's another thing, because that's the marketing part of my brain. Like, you could do all that, but if it looks boring, who cares? Like, it's not going to sell.
Yeah, everyone will be like, no, Pat. Yeah. Let's see a TikTok about it.
Right. Book talk. That's the thing. Book talk.
Wait, tell me that's not a real thing that's happening.
Oh, it's a real thing that's happening. No. I know. So my friend's 14-year-old son has been teaching me for like the last few months. We've been having like, he's been teaching me how to do it. And that's where a lot of authors are going. Well, you know, you got to go.
Yeah. Listen, we all do at some point. You have to dance for our supper on TikTok.
I'll be your dancing pony, whatever you need me to do.
Just behind the damn book.
Yeah, I'll just hashtag it and do what you need.
What were some surprising things that were like particular? Wow, I don't speak English anymore. That's a problem. What were some things that were particularly surprising when you were doing all this research and uncovering this stuff?
There's some movies that I just thought were, you know, people's earliest performances are really kind of fun to see. They're The Bad video, which is Michael Jackson. Martin Scorsese filmed it at Hoyt Schemerhorn, which is, I don't know if you ever used that subway stop.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's a huge one. Scorsese, it's 1986, I think they filmed it, and they shut it down, you know. And so Michael Jackson, if you look at that video, it's Tupac Shakur as his main dancer. And Tupac, who was a great dancer.
What?
Great dancer. Well,
didn't he go to Juilliard?
He did, or and not, he also maybe, was in Digital Underground. I mean, he as soon as he became a rapper, he was no longer like smiley dance guy. He was like Tupac. But he's in Bad. Look at that video. Uh-huh. His smile is as wide as any.
I'm going to watch that immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was fun to watch that. And he's also, he's so beautiful. He was so gorgeous.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Those puppy dog eyes he had. And then he's a great actor. He did a lot of acting, you know, in his last couple of years. Also, there's a movie called The Lords of Flatbush, which is early, mid-70s, and it's Sylvester Stallone and Henry Winkler before they were famous, and they play this gang. This is streaming on Amazon, so it's this. 1974, and they're wearing leather jackets, and they're in this gang, but they don't get in fights, really. They're just kind of... It's really funny and sweet.
Yeah, they're a gang, but it's more like the Boy Scouts, but with leather jackets.
They're like 25-year-old high school seniors, like in a gang, that kind of thing. But like that was really like a lot of fun little movies, like were really a fun treat. Mm-hmm. And then there's this movie that I saw, and it's with John Cryer, and it's called Went to Coney Island, Be Back by Five. Oh, God. Went to Coney Island on a Mission from God, Be Back by Five.
Was there not a longer title available?
I would not have chosen that. So Richard Shankman is the director. Mm-hmm. And I was just looking up anybody that had movies, you know, on IMDb. And I looked up the director, Richard Shankman, and said, oh, hey, I'm writing this book. And I'm looking to ask people what it's like to film on location in Brooklyn. He wrote back to me pretty quickly and said that was my favorite project I ever did. And he does a lot of like DVD extras of directing for that. He goes, that was my favorite project I ever worked on. I goes, I got a bunch of images if you're looking for any. And he sends them to me, and they're these gorgeous black and white jackpot. Like it's mid-90s and gorgeous images. And he had great quotes that I could use. Like also I have a chapter on that, like filming in Brooklyn. And just a lovely person and gave great quotes and just like an interesting film. And it was like, and I met cool people. You know what I mean? I feel like I made a new friend and like stuff like that was really, really great. That's I love rabbit holes.
Oh yeah. Well, and I'm sure also for some filmmakers that are less prominent, I mean, you know, everybody knows Spike Lee and Martin Scorsese are synonymous with New York.
Right.
I'm sure you found mountains of stuff connected to them, but you know, I imagine for some of the lesser known filmmakers, to have their work recognized after all this time.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's exciting.
Yeah.
It's got to feel fun for them.
Yeah. It was flattering. And he was, yeah. And his picture is, I'm showing you, but it's like on the back cover.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Everyone will have to get the book and check that out.
Yeah. You got to get the book and check it out. That's y'all. Yeah. But yeah, it was just that kind of stuff like that. Oh, and there's a woman named Radha Blank, and she mm-hmm. had a movie come out on Netflix last year, and it's called The 40-Year-Old Version.
Oh.
And I don't know if you've heard of her. She, it was bought at Sundance, and she plays this woman who's 40 years old. She's a performance playwright, director, and she had a lot of success, and then she kind of burns out in her 30s, and now she's like this music teacher in Harlem. Mm-hmm. And she wants to get back into playwriting and musicals. And she basically begins a hip-hop rap career, and she's writing a musical. And it's sort of a takeoff on In the Heights, but it's about Harlem gentrification.
Oh.
And she's hilarious. And she does these raps that are fucking hilarious. And it's just about women and racial colorization and she has a whole thing about white men with black women butts, and she has a whole thing about white people moving to Harlem and like, we're making it better here, aren't we? And
oh boy, yeah,
white saviorism. But she's hilariously funny. I'm not doing it justice, but it's called The 40-Year-Old Version, and it was such mm-hmm. it's such a funny, powerful movie, and she's such a great voice, and that's been really fun to like find people like her.
I love that. That's really cool. I'm like, all of these things, I keep making notes because I'm like, I want to look this up.
Yeah, Netflix.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is there any movie that you were surprised to find out was not filmed in New York?
A lot of, Captain America is a kid from Brooklyn. They don't film him in Brooklyn. Like,
where do they do that?
England, Germany.
What?
I know. Manhattan. They film in any other place but in Brooklyn.
Palm Springs, Tampa. Yeah.
And I mean, that's the one that really stuck out for me. But there's also like A Tree Grows in Brooklyn is filmed on a lot in California. There's a play.
Now that bums me out because it has Brooklyn in the damn name.
I know. And it was a book I loved when I was a kid. There's a few that are filmed on lots.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of green screens. And especially nowadays, there's so much green screen going on because
it really bums me out. It doesn't look as good.
No. And I can tell.
We can tell. Yeah.
It distracts me and I can tell.
Yeah. It's not my favorite. Oh, when you were saying, I wanted to ask you also, when you were saying about the... bad video being shot at the subway stop. I was told when I was in high school, I did like a drama class trip to New York, and we went out and we were told that there is a subway stop that is it's not in operation. It's only used for filming, like an older subway stop that is.
Yes, that's at Smith and 9th Street.
What line is that on?
It's F and G.
Okay.
It's where they filmed in the movie Goodfellas, where Robert De Niro is sending Karen to get dresses. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've seen like Goodfellas a million times, so it's like I know that scene.
I've seen it more than it's my favorite movie.
Me too. Obsessed. Yeah, he's like, go down the street. No, just down the street. Go there. Yeah, and she's terrified and she leaves. That's the stop. So it's like she's across the street from it.
Oh, and you can interesting.
Look up. And you look up and it's like 100 feet in the air. And so they have multiple lines going so they can film up there. And I think they film part of Joker up there. There's a few things they film up there.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I always wonder because I'm like, I'm obviously it's expensive, very expensive whenever you have to shut down traffic.
Yeah.
Anywhere. But also, you know, if somebody's filming something in Los Angeles and there's a cross street that if you come up to a cross street and it's blocked for filming, you're like, okay, pain in the ass, but I can go another street. Where if you're on the subway, it's like, son of a bitch. Because could be a 2-hour jaunt out of your way to take connecting trains to go to the same place. And it's like, I can imagine New Yorkers would lose their minds.
Yeah, because the subway never shuts down. There's also a transit museum and they use that quite a bit.
Oh, interesting. For subway shots.
Yeah.
Wait, where's that?
It's in Brooklyn Heights, I believe.
That's so funny. How, I mean, there's a museum for everything, and I didn't, I just didn't know of that, but that makes a lot of sense because obviously you'd have subway cars or whatever set up there.
Yeah, yeah, from every different period.
That's incredible. I could wait, was all of Goodfellas filmed in New York?
Mostly. There's a lot in, yeah, like there's some in New Jersey, Staten Island, a little bit in Long Island, but yeah.
I love that movie so much. I could do a whole separate episode about Goodfellas. Did you get to, were there any directors that you got to meet through this?
I tried to meet, but, you know, it's very hard to get anybody. It was, you know, it's my first book, so
yeah.
it's a little bit tougher. Yeah. I'd like to do projects in the future. I'd like to do would be, I'd love to write a book about Goodfellas. I'd love to write a book about Moonstruck. I'd love to write a book about, the book about it. And I think I would have a better chance. Saturday Night Fever, I'd love to write about.
Yeah. This experience.
Yeah, I have it. Yeah. Believe me, I was like, can I get on Spike Lee's schedule? And they're very polite.
Well, and hopefully you never know who. There could be somebody listening right now that's like, oh, that's my uncle. And you send them copy of the book. There you go.
Right. You never know. So I always, you know, I worked in PR and marketing. You get told no all the time. So I was like, whatever, you know, but I've tried.
Yeah.
But I did a ton of reading and research. And so that's why I have a bibliography, you know.
Yeah, well, and that is so invaluable because it's like even the I feel like you have to have the talent, the skill, the organization, the drive, and all of that on top of the curiosity for wanting. Because I'm like, I love Goodfellas. I'm very curious. Not enough to go research.
Yeah,
well, but enough to read your book and you know, look into it that way, like, oh, somebody else did all the research, fantastic, I will just take this distilled version, you know. So it's really invaluable that you have that skill and the want to do that. I can imagine anyone that has a big love of movies, especially like Spike Lee or Martin Scorsese, it's like, let's get this book to them because they're...
Yes, yes, please.
So are you actively working on your next book right now?
I'm figuring out what it's going to be. I have two podcasts that I also... I have a few podcasts that I put out. So I'm always like writing, reading something, and I'm always coming up with ideas for things. So yeah, there's always something. I always have piles on my desk for things that I'm working on.
I love it. And do you have the red string too with the board?
I can't do the red string. I can never keep up with that. I find that too stressful. Way too stressful. That's I don't hilarious. Know how people do that.
So what are, will you tell everyone about your podcasts as well?
Yeah, sure. So I co-host one. I have a friend named Margo. And we're both named Margo, and we co-host a show called Book Versus Movie, where we read a book and then we see the movie that's adapted from the book. And then we talk about like which we like better and the differences and stuff like that. And that's really fun. And then I co-host a show called What a Creep with my friend Sonia. And we talk about creeps from the past to the present.
Hoo boy.
Yeah. And it gets busy.
Yeah. I was going to say you could record 10, 20 episodes a day.
It gets busy. And then lastly, I co-host a show with Sonia as well. It's called Dorking Out, where we dork out about movies. So we just pick a movie, we talk about it, and then we talk about what we're dorking out for the week. So we talk about podcasts or books or songs or just whatever we're excited about.
I love that. For the book, of course, book versus movie is like an ages old argument, which usually falls in favor of the book. But I'm like, not always. I mean, are there any of that books or movies that stuck out as like where you were surprised that it was?
Yes, several. Yeah. Jaws is a terrible book. Like a really bad book. Yeah.
That's funny.
Terrible.
I have the book. My grandma gave me the book. I haven't read it, but I love Jaws.
Jaws is the perfect movie. I mean, it's a movie I can watch over and over again. Yeah. The book is terrible. It's not good at all. I argue that I don't think Jurassic Park is a great book. It's a fun read, but the dialogue is terrible. Steven Spielberg is a great adapter of movies.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm like, just
really
those two
knows
right
how
there.
To do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Graduate, the movie with Dustin Hoffman, mm-hmm. The original book is not that great.
Oh, interesting.
The movie is much, much better. We have quite a few, but we've also done things like songs to movies, magazine articles uh-huh. that became movies, like anything that becomes a movie.
Have you done The Irishman?
No. I think we've had to put the limit on the size of the book, because if the book is like 500 pages or something.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Because we get a lot of people who that are like, Ulysses. I don't know, something like really, really big books. I'm just like.
Yeah, they're like, how about The Iliad? You're like, first of all, there's no movie. Secondly.
Yeah, but we just can't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that one I would be. I'm not always like a book versus movie person. I'm like, well, there's a little of something here for this person or whatever. I know people get really upset over like the Harry Potter movies or whatever. Although Jurassic Park, I did not know that was a book. That's
Michael Crichton is the
writer.
That
makes sense.
Yeah.
It's an incredible movie. I just rewatched it recently. I'm like, this holds up.
I freaking love that movie. That first one is powerful. I mean, I think it just totally holds up. And I was on the Disaster Girls podcast. Okay. And yeah, we were talking about it. And they're just like, that relationship between Laura Dern and Sam Neill is mm-hmm. so fantastic. It's so like, the effects hold up. Special effects are great. Still.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's still mm-hmm. scary. And it feels, you know, the more people play with science, the more realistic it feels. I'm like, let's stop. Let's stop while we're ahead, guys. You know what's also fascinating to me, and this is a little sidebar, is that Spielberg is unquestionably, he's one of the best. He's incredible. And I think so many people, their favorite movies are Steven Spielberg films. But then when you ask somebody their favorite director, I've never heard somebody say Steven Spielberg.
Or they get mocked for it. He's almost like, people say he's like too much of a people pleaser, or he's too popular, you know, or he's too sentimental. And
that's so silly. That's like saying the Beatles are too popular.
Well, people will say that too, because they're assholes. I mean, they're wrong, clearly.
Yeah.
He's done things like E.T.
Mm-hmm.
Or I mean, he's been very, very successful, so people want to knock him for that, but He's done Munich. He did Bridge of Spies. He's done like the Armistead. He's done like tough ones. Like he's done like really deep, like tough topics.
Yeah.
He's in his 70s and he doesn't stop. Like he's still, and his skill at making a movie is incredible. Like he just puts a movie together beautifully.
Yeah. Well, and he pulls you into it. It's the emotion, even something like Poltergeist, fun. I really love Poltergeist. It's fun, but you care about the characters all the way through, top to bottom. You're invested. And that's, you know.
Isn't that Toby Hooper, though? I think that's more
Poltergeist?
Toby Hooper.
Oh, no. Am I?
Yeah.
Wait, can we look this up? I thought Steven Spielberg directed it.
I think he's the producer. I think Toby Hooper's more the director. But,
well, you know what? Even
but
as
he
a producer,
did E.T. But he has his mark on it. He does a ton of producing. Yeah.
Well,
but E.T. is like his big.
Listen, Margo, if you can ever count on me for one thing, it's mixing up details.
I do that all the time.
All the time.
All the time.
But yeah, he's incredible. And E.T. has us caring about a fucking puppet, essentially.
Like, and you cry your eyes out when you know, spoiler, but he's okay in the end.
So good. So good. And I'm like still so attached to E.T. Well, that's great. I can't wait. I'm so glad that you had the time during the pandemic to finally write a book.
Me too.
You know, and get that out. You know, the pandemic wasn't bad for everything. Obviously, it was tragic for a lot of reasons, but time to.
It was nice to finish it. I mean, and it was, I had a party the other night. We had a book party. My friend threw me a party, which was really nice. And they had a trivia game for my book, which was really fun.
Oh, I love that.
Right? And the guy that held the trivia game, he's in the movie business, but he's on like the business side.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, like, feel good about yourself because so many people start things and they don't complete it
yeah.
for whatever reason.
Yeah.
There's so many reasons why it doesn't get finished. You know, so many things that are not in your control that it just doesn't get finished. And he says, like, just feel really good, like you got it done. Like,
yeah.
And I've been really enjoying that.
Good. Good. Was it, I imagine it was just surreal every step of the way. Like, okay, and now I've handed in my manuscript. And
oh, yeah. Because I still every once in a while I'll check something like, oh, I should include that. And I'm like, oh, too late.
Yeah. it's printed. Ooh. Was it I imagine that was also like just so emotional getting your first book. Yeah. Like when you get the galleys and you're just holding it.
when I see my name across the bottom. Like, and then, my family name is on the side, Donahue. I just was
I love it. Yeah. Are you doing a book tour with it?
I'm not going on tour. I'm a bit, COVID, like no airplanes. Thank you. I'm not,
Sure.
I'm doing some talking gigs around Brooklyn right now. And I'm doing, everything's on podcasts and stuff like that.
I love
That's
it.
That's what I'm doing. Yeah.
Well, I hope to catch one when I'm in one of my times back and forth between New York and LA.
Yeah, please.
That'd be really cool.
Let's keep in touch.
I have one last question for you.
Anything.
if your childhood self, if like little 10-year-old Margot could meet you as an adult today, what would she think of you?
She'd say, well done. You got the apartment, you got the cat, you got the books.
Love it.
Congratulations.
That's great. I think she'd be like, this is fucking incredible. What?
Yeah. You grew your hair out because my mom would never let me grow my hair long. Like, she'd be really psyched.
I love it so much whenever, we're able to fulfill the dreams of our childhood selves. I know that is exceedingly corny, but it's really sweet. It's like you did it. You did the thing.
Thank you.
That's incredible. Well, tell everyone where you prefer to them to get your book and hear your podcasts.
Well, please, you can find my book anywhere. Once again, it's called Filmed in Brooklyn. My name's Margot Donahue. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstores. And you could find me on Twitter and Instagram at Brooklyn Fitchick. My site is brooklynfitchick.com. And I'm on the TikTok, as I tell my friend's TikTok. Son just to drive. I know, just to drive him crazy because he's like, it's just TikTok. I'm like, I know. But it's at Margot Donahue. And thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. Is it? Here's a quick question too. Here's my last question, and then one more. Does it help you as an author if somebody requests your book at their local bookstore versus like getting it on Amazon? Does that help? Does that like move the needle for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm told it's better. I mean, the best place it's Arcadia Publishing is my publisher.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the most amount of money if you get it from Arcadia Publishing.
Oh yeah. So but, do that everyone.
Yeah.
Jeff Bozo doesn't need more money.
Yeah, I know. But it's available on Kindle. And if you're a Kindle person, that's where you get it. So, wherever.
That's fantastic. Just pick it up. I can't wait to. I started to read it, but I'm such a slow reader. So it's going to take me a little while. But I love it so far. It's very, very exciting, especially like, the blend with history and current day. And it's very cool. I just love
it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being on. I'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for listening. Once again, that was Margot Donahue. You can find her on Twitter and Instagram at BrooklynFitChick and on TikTok at Margot Donahue. And definitely, definitely get her book Filmed in Brooklyn. And of course, I am Lisa Curry. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Venmo, most places at Olympian Lisa Curry. And please do. I have two headlining weekends coming up through the end of the year. First, I am headlining in Boston at a new spot called Off Cabot. I'm so excited. That's going to be Friday and Saturday, December 2nd and 3rd. Tickets are available at their website right now. December 15th, I am headlining in Vail, Colorado. You can get tickets at vailcomedyshow.com. I've never been. I am so thrilled to go. And December 16th and 17th, I am headlining in Fort Collins, Colorado at the Comedy Fort. I've never performed at the Comedy Fort. I've got three shows for you there, two on Friday, one on Saturday, or one on Friday, two on Saturday. Listen, I can't remember, but it is on their website. So if you go to the Comedy Fort's website, you can find the tickets now and get them. And I would love to see you in any of those places. It's going to be a great time. Other than that, I will see you right back here next Thursday. Bye.